All right, it's 9 o'clock here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 www.freakradio.org. And it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. March 29th is Drop the Charges Call in Support of Minneapolis Fur Protesters Day. As fur protesters and avid animal lovers Isaac Peter and Michael Lawson stood chanting anti-fur slogans on the sidewalk outside of Rubenick's Furs in downtown Minneapolis on March 2nd, neither expected to be spending their evening undergoing booking at the Hennepin County Jail. They had been protesting in the same location using the same chants for over 5 months. Why would this March 2nd be any different? Officers, including sergeants, had often assured them, "You can chant as much as you want, scream to the top of your lungs for all I care, just don't block the sidewalks." But things took a turn for the worse when two Minneapolis police officers who Peter and Lawson had never seen before arrived on the scene, entered into the storefront without attempting to engage in dialogue with either protester. And after speaking with owner Bill Ribnick, they exited informing both protesters they were being charged with disorderly conduct for being too loud. Both protesters attempted to tell the officers of the circumstances and that previous officers had given them assurance that they were acting within their rights. The male officer's response was immediately that he wasn't interested. Peter and Lawson were taken to the Hennepin County Jail until bail was posted. When it came time for their arraignment, it became clear that this was not an ordinary disorderly conduct charge. Bill Ribnick, owner of Ribnick's Furs, who was not even a party to the case, was in attendance with a very expensive and affluent attorney by his side, talking with a city prosecutor as she hugged him and gave him her condolences. In a disgusting attempt to curb free speech and a shocking example of a prosecution pandering to the interests of a wealthy businessman, the city offered to drop the charges in exchange that Isaac and Michael would not be allowed to exercise their right to protest at Ribnick's Furs for a year. Both Isaac Peter and Michael Lawson refused the deal, citing outrage at the backdoor and backroom bribery that had taken place and an undeterred dedication to the mink, fox, chinchilla, and other animals killed for their fur. Defendant Michael Lawson released this statement after the arraignment. "If Ribnick thinks he's the only person that can pressure the prosecutor, he's wrong. We may not have the money or political connections that Bill Ribnick has, but we have a broader network of people committed to free speech and compassion towards animals that he could never hope to have. The voice of the people will always beat backroom scheming." Peter and Lawson can't beat Ribnick in money, but they intend to beat him in community support. Excuse me. "That's why we need compassionate folks to call the Minneapolis prosecutor Susan Siegel and tell her that scheming with Rubnik Furs and other businesses to criminalize legally protected boycotts and protests is unacceptable. They are now asking people to call the city prosecutor's office and tell them to drop the charges against Isaac Peter and Michael Lawson immediately." And here's the call-in for Isaac and Michael is going to take place Monday, March 29th. That's coming up here just a few days away. Who do you call? Susan Siegel, city attorney. Her phone number, 612-673-3272. What do you do? Demand she drop the charges against Isaac Peter and Michael Lawson and tell her that we won't stand by while our rights to free speech and peaceful protest is being thrown out the window. Please keep calls polite but insistent. And that number again, 612-673-3272, and ask to speak with Susan Siegel, city attorney. And here's the update from the field for the Buffalo Field Campaign for this week. Good news on Tuesday, the Buffalo Field Campaign with other Buffalo advocates, the Western Watersheds Project, Gallatin Wildlife Association, and the Yellowstone Buffalo Foundation filed a lawsuit against Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks for their decision to house quarantined Yellowstone buffalo where they cannot be accessed by the public on Turner Enterprises Incorporated's Green Ranch, and for the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks decision to pay TEI with the offspring of these buffalo that began their lives as wildlife in Yellowstone National Park. We asserted that Fish, Wildlife, and Parks' decision violates the public trust and goes against their promise that all bison, including offspring, would be managed as public wildlife and could never be privatized or commercialized. Currently, the public has no access to these buffalo and are unable to monitor their condition or ensure their welfare. On Tuesday, the Buffalo Field Campaign learned that Fish, Wildlife, and Parks did not send 88 buffalo to Turner's. They sent 87. One adult female that was not pregnant was kept behind at the Corwin Springs quarantine facility. We further learned that a day or two after the 87 buffalo arrived at Turner's, a calf died. Turner's ranch manager claims that the calf was sick and orphaned, but why would Fish, Wildlife, and Parks send a calf in this condition out of quarantine? What was wrong with it and what happened to its mother? Buffalo Field Campaign will continue to investigate. The incident, which happened over a month ago without notification to the public, is a clear demonstration of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and that's Montana Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, lack of disclosure and underscores the need for the public to have access to these bison. The buffalo migration has begun. The buffalo are coming and we celebrate their arrival. It is a very exciting time of year. Beautiful, healthy family groups with buffalo of all ages and sizes are migrating through the Madison Valley River corridor, many of them round-bellied with the budding gift of the next generation. The buffalo are making their way along the lands that are their birthright, heading to their favorite spring habitat and calving grounds. We feel blessed to be in their presence again. Oh, you, oh, buffalo, are my earth. May we understand this, an old Lakota Sundance prayer. This is tempered, however, as we know that harm from livestock interests await the buffalo. The Montana Department of Livestock has promised to be even less tolerant this year, and we've already seen what their so-called tolerance looks like. Multiple Montana Department of Livestock agents are currently in town. Buffalo Field Campaign volunteers are ready to stand with the buffalo and defend their right to roam free, documenting all actions made against them and sharing everything we learn with you, the media, and the decision makers that can help make a difference. Bull buffalo may soon be targets of other dangerous government action. The Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, or APHIS, a part of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, with very little notice to the public, released an environmental assessment on their proposal to immobilize, that is, to dart with drugs, bull bison on the Gallatin National Forest in order to study their semen and blood. There are many reasons why this futile and frivolous study should be rejected. Comments are due tomorrow, but Buffalo Field Campaign encourages everyone to continue to send comments. Buffalo Field Campaign is also a strong presence on the highways right now, warning motorists that our buffalo ahead and buffalo crossing signs of the presence of these massive land mammals as they make their way to Horse Butte and other habitat outside of Yellowstone's ecologically meaningless boundaries. We have also contacted the Montana Department of Transportation and the Governor's Office, appealing to them for help in warning motorists to mitigate bison vehicle collisions. The governor's office has promised that action will be taken. We want you to let Congress know that you want buffalo and their native habitat protected. Communicate your strong support for wild buffalo to Congress by asking them to, first, stop using your tax dollars to fund Montana Department of Livestock and Yellowstone National Park operations that harm or lead to the slaughter of wild buffalo. 2. Use your tax dollars wisely by purchasing livestock grazing rights on land adjacent to Yellowstone National Park, which will open habitat for wild buffalo and other native wildlife forever. For more detailed information on how to persuade Congress, you can review Buffalo Field Campaign's comments to House members who oversee taxpayer funding affecting America's last wild buffalo. And I'll give you their webpage here in just a minute. A call out for experienced Buffalo Field Campaign volunteers, please come home. It is that exciting time of year again on the western boundary of Yellowstone National Park. The bison migration has begun. Buffalo Field Campaign volunteers are currently in the field before sunup until well after dark, monitoring the highways and landscape. We have an amazing crew of people this year, new and dedicated volunteers to document the government's harassment of our shaggy friends, the buffalo. However, we are spreading the few experienced volunteers very thin, filling out patrols. This is a call to any and all experienced volunteers to return to the land of the last wild bison and join us again in our efforts to stop the harassment and slaughter. The Montana Department of Livestock has said in so many words, there will be less tolerance this season as if there had ever been more tolerance in the past. We need to maintain a constant presence and pressure in the field, and we need your experience to do that. Quit your jobs, drop out of school, and do whatever you have to do to come home to the Buffalo Field Campaign. You can contact Pete to volunteer at buffalofieldcampaign.org or call 406-646-0070. Here's the mailing address for the Buffalo Field Campaign to send your donations to. Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. Or you can go to their webpage at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org, figure out what they need, and get it to them, because they do need lots of stuff. And once again, if you do want to volunteer, go to their webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign, read all about being a volunteer, and then call them at 406-646-0070 and talk to them before you go. Remember, the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And the Forest Service is to up Stanislaw logging, in this story written by Walt Cook of the Union Democrat. Timber harvested this year in the Stanislaw National Forest is scheduled to exceed last year's amount by several million board feet, or hundreds of extra logging truck loads. This last year, around 23 million board feet were sold from the National Forest. This year, the U.S. Forest Service officials expect to sell 32 million board feet. Board foot is a piece of wood, a foot long, a foot wide, and an inch thick. The Forest Service gave an update on its timber sale projections at an annual meeting of its timber sale program. This year's meeting was held at the Delta Blood Bank in Sonora. Logging advocates praised the increase in projected timber sales, but they said more lumber should be extracted from the Stanislaw nonetheless. Chris Conrad of the Tuolumne County Alliance for Resources and Environment, a Twain Heart-based group that in part represents logging interests, was among them. We do have a concern that the trend needs to stay on the increase, Conrad said. With the lawsuits from some of the environmental groups taking the volume from the private market, the Forest Service sales become even more important. Conrad was referring to recent lawsuits that have tied up logging plans on private land owned by Sierra Pacific Industries, SPI, the state's largest private landowner, owns patches of forest within various national forests in the state. The environmental groups bringing suit say SPI's clear-cutting practices cause erosion and damage rivers and wildlife habitat. The suits also allege that greenhouse gas emissions have not been properly analyzed in SPI's recent logging plans. Clear-cutting is not allowed on national forest lands in the Sierra Nevada, but the rule doesn't apply to private lands within the forest. Conrad is also concerned that the trees offered for sale on national forest lands are of an increasingly smaller diameter due to lawsuits. In Conrad's view, not only has the downturn in lumber supply, he noted that in 1970, around 135 million board feet of timber were taken out of Stanislaw National Forest, hurt the local economy, but has also put the mother lode communities at risk from catastrophic fires. It's frightening, he said. To curb the fire risk, he said, realistically, the Forest Service needs to approve the sale of hundreds of millions of board feet within the Stanislaw National Forest alone. Sierra Pacific Industries' Mike Pawlicki said his company is anxious to log more land. If they put up timber sales, we'll be there to bid, he said. SPI's operations have been hit hard due to the down economy, which has resulted in a near standstill in home construction industry statewide. Nonetheless, Pawlicki blames the lack of log supply for his company's woes. Over the past year, SPI closed various sawmills, including the company's mill and Standard, California. The closure of the Standard Mill not only has loggers worried, but also local Forest Service officials, as well as John Buckley, executive director of the Twain Heart-based environmental group, the Central Sierra Environment Resource Center. Buckley is opposed to clear cutting, but he has publicly expressed support for selective cutting or thinning logging methods. Such methods can reduce fuel loads, but yet protect habitat and provide erosion control, thinning proponents say. Deb Romberger, a Forest Service resource manager, noted that sawmills can be used to help reduce wildfire risks. There's a value in having commercial enterprise. She said we need all the tools. Buckley, meanwhile, said that without the standard mill, SBI will be forced to take locally harvested timber to sawmills located over 100 miles away. This, he said, could cut into the bottom line of Sierra Pacific Industries and eventually result in the cash-strapped Forest Service accepting lower offers on timber sales and doing slash cleanup work in-house. Buckley put some perspective on the 32 million board feet of wood that could be sold from the Stanislaw National Forest this year, saying it would be equal to 8 to 10,000 logging truck loads. And Congo Basin gorillas under mounting threat, the new report has been released. In this story by Reagan Doherty, with editing by Alistair Doyle and Kevin Liffey of the Thomson Reuters Environmental News Service. Gorillas may become near extinct in the Africa's Greater Congo Basin by the mid-2020s unless action is taken to prevent poaching and protect their habitat, a UN-backed report said recently. The situation is particularly critical in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, where activity by local militias has hit local gorilla populations, according to the report by the UN Environment Program, UNEP, and Interpol. Illegal logging, mining, charcoal production, and escalating demand for bushmeat, or meat for food, an increasing portion of which is ape meat, have also taken their toll. Logging and mining camps believed to have links to the militias are hiring poachers to supply refugees and markets in towns across the region with bushmeat, UNEP said. Trade in smuggled minerals and timber drives the militia's activities, generating between $14 and $50 million annually. Gorillas may have largely disappeared from large parts of the Greater Congo Basin by the mid-2020s unless urgent action is taken, the report said. The study was bleaker than a 2002 UN forecast that only 10% of the original gorilla ranges would remain by 2030. Gorillas are yet another victim of the contempt sown by organized criminal gangs for national and international laws aimed at defending wildlife, said David Higgins, manager of the Interpol Environment Crime Program. Akeem Steiner, executive director of the UNEP, said, "This is a tragedy for the great apes, and one also for countless other species being impacted by this intensifying and all too often illegal trade." Outbreaks of Ebola fever have also killed thousands of gorillas. Estimates suggest that up to 90% of the infected animals die. The report did have some positive news of a previously unknown gorilla population. A new and as yet unpublished survey in one area of the Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo in the center of the conflict zone has discovered 750 critically endangered eastern lowland gorillas, the report said. And a giant Ethiopian dam will make 200,000 people go hungry. In this story by Barry Malone, editing by Giles Elgood of Thomson Reuters Environment News Service. More than 200,000 Ethiopians who rely on fishing and farming could become reliant on aid to survive if the Ethiopian government goes ahead with building Africa's biggest hydropower dam, an advocacy group said recently. Ethiopia is building the 1.4 billion euro dam as part of a campaign to beat power shortages and become a power exporter. The dam, Jibe 3, is expected to generate 1.8 gigawatts, almost doubling Ethiopia's current capacity of just under 2 gigawatts. Tribal rights group Survival International says the dam will cause displacement and upset fishing and farming. Among the tribes that will be affected are the Kwigu and the Hamar. These tribes are self-sufficient, but this dam will ruin their economies, a Survival International representative who did not wish to be named said. It will end the annual flooding some rely on to make the land they farm fertile, and for tribes who rely on fishing, it will deplete the stocks. They will need aid. Ethiopia is negotiating funding for the dam, which began construction in 2006 with the World Bank, the African Development Bank, and the European Investment Bank, and the Italian government. No respectable outside body should be funding this atrocious project, Survival International Director Stephen Corey said in a statement. The country's utility, EEP Company, was not immediately available to comment. The government has said that people affected by hydropower dams will be compensated or relocated. The country is building 5 more hydropower dams, some funded by the World Bank. Hydropower fuels about 90% of its energy, EEPCO says. And we at Earth First Update invite you to sign an online petition against this Ethiopian dam. We, the undersigned, call upon the Ethiopian government to suspend the Gibe 3 project on the Omo River unless and until it obtains the free, prior, and informed consent of the affected tribes to the project, restores the right of the community associations which have been closed down to operate freely, and to revoke Proclamation 621/2009, which prohibits many charities from working on human rights issues, and to recognize the Omo tribe's collective land ownership right as guaranteed under international law and the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We also call on the African Development Bank, the European Investment Bank, the World Bank, the Italian government, and the Kenyan government not to grant any economic and political support to the devastating and illegal Gibe 3 project. The massive Gibe 3 dam on the Omo River threatens the land and livelihoods of 500,000 tribal people in southern Ethiopia and northern Kenya. If built, the dam will end the river's natural flood cycle on which the downstream communities have depended for growing food, fishing, and grazing animals for thousands of years. The dam will also dramatically reduce the water flow to Lake Turkana, the world's largest desert lake. Most of the affected people know very little about the project, which threatens their future and their survival. In violation of international law and the Ethiopian constitution, they have not been consulted about it. The Ethiopian government is harshly clamping down on any dissent in the Omo Valley, and the affected people are not able to express their views or get independent information about the project. As proposed, the Gibe 3 dam will devastate the unique ecosystems of the Omo and Lake Turkana, which have both been recognized as UNESCO World Heritage Sites. It also violates Ethiopia's constitution, international conventions, and the environmental safeguard policies of the international financial institutions and the strategic priorities of the Independent World Commission on Dams. Construction has started, but the Ethiopian government needs more than $1.4 billion to finish the dam. In spite of these serious impacts and numerous violations, the African Development Bank, the European Investment Bank, the World Bank, the Italian government, and the Kenyan government are currently considering funding the project. The Counterbalance Coalition, the Campaign for Reform of the World Bank, Friends of Lake Turkana, International Rivers, and Survival International ask everyone to join the campaign to defend the rights of the tribes of the Omo Valley and the Lake Turkana region and help stop the destructive Gibe 3 project. And here's the website to go to find that petition. It's www.stopgibe3.org. That's www.stopgibe3.org. And turning to some biological diversity news, a lawsuit has been filed to save old-growth redwoods. To save some of California's last remaining old-growth redwoods from the chainsaw, the Center for Biological Diversity, along with Friends of the Gualala River and the Coast Action Group, have sued 2 California agencies over a destructive logging project on the Northern California coast. The logging project proposed by the California Department of Forestry and the California Department of Fish and Game proposes to harvest 18 acres of old-growth trees near the Gualala River, which straddles Mendocino and Sonoma counties. These ancient trees, which are up to 9 feet in diameter, represent the last nesting habitat in the area for the barbled murrelet, an extremely endangered species of coastal bird. Loss of old-growth forest is the main cause of the precipitous decline in murrelet populations, and the vast majority of old-growth redwood forest stands are now gone from California. There is no good reason to log these redwoods, some of which are centuries old, said Justin Augustine with the Center for Biological Diversity. California, especially Mendocino County, is in a huge deficit when it comes to old-growth redwood, and every California agency should be working to save these trees, not authorize their destruction. And endangered jaguars have been spotted just south of Arizona. A year ago, the last known jaguar in the United States, Macho B, was caught in an Arizona Game and Fish Department wire snare, suffering injury and stress, and was euthanized 12 days later. The U.S. Inspector General described last February 18th snaring as intentional criminal wrongdoing. Recently, the Sky Island Alliance released jaguar photos snapped by a remote camera in northern Sonora, Mexico, just 30 miles south of Arizona. The photos could be of a single jaguar or two different individuals, and the sex of the animals isn't known. In response to 13 years of pressure, lawsuits, and organizing by the Center for Biological Diversity and others, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced it will finally designate the critical habitat for jaguars, as well as develop a federal recovery plan. Our suit to stop the Arizona Fish and Game Department from capturing and killing additional jaguars is still active. And the center has sued the federal government over Grand Canyon uranium records. The Center for Biological Diversity has sued the U.S. Bureau of Land Management for illegally withholding public records relating to destructive uranium mines immediately north of Grand Canyon National Park. Some of the records relate to the Arizona 1 mine, which the Bureau said it would allow to reopen for operations despite the fact that its environmental reviews haven't been updated since 1988. So the center and allies sued last November. By withholding the uranium mining records, the Bureau has violated the Freedom of Information Act and is directly resisting our campaign to stop activities that would harm numerous endangered Grand Canyon species and continue uranium mining's legacy of deadly radiological contamination of land and water in the area. After much center involvement last year, Obama's Interior Department proposed a 20-year mineral withdrawal, which would forbid uranium mining across nearly a million acres of public land surrounding the Grand Canyon. And a bill would ban lead bullets in California wildlife preserves. In the latest victory against lead poisoning in California, Assemblymember Pedro Nava announced the introduction of Bill 2223, which will ban the use of toxic lead shot in California's 627,000-acre network of designated state wildlife areas. While the use of lead shot for waterfowl hunting has been banned by federal law, lead ammunition for upland game is currently allowed in most state wildlife areas, and that lead often ends up contaminating wetland ecosystems. We need to get lead out of wildlife areas, said Nava. It makes no sense to allow people to leave poisonous material in our state parks. Assemblymember Nava is also the author of the landmark Ridley Tree Condor Preservation Act, which requires non-lead ammunition throughout the California range of the endangered California condor, and which the Center for Biological Diversity petitioned for in 2004. And desert nesting bald eagles have been denied federal protection. In a devastating blow to eagles in the Southwest, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service officially announced that desert nesting bald eagles in Arizona's Sonoran Desert aren't significant enough to deserve Endangered Species Act protection. When bald eagles nationwide were declared recovered in 2007 and removed from the endangered species list, unfortunately, desert nesting bald eagles were also removed, robbed of protections even though they're still under dire threat from development dams, stream dewatering, grazing ORVs, and other activities. No recognized bald eagle expert agreed with the 2007 removal of protections for these desert eagles, and no expert agrees with the recent decision. The Center for Biological Diversity has been campaigning to earn the desert eagles genetically distinct from bald eagles nationwide, their own much-needed Endangered Species Act status since 2004, and we won't let them slip through the cracks now. And help save Arizona forests from ORVs. Northern Arizona's spectacular Kaibab National Forest, bordering the Grand Canyon to the north, on the north, is under siege by off-road vehicles and too many roads, but the U.S. Forest Service has so far ignored recommendations by the Center for Biological Diversity and allies for a road system that benefits species and habitat. Instead, the Forest Service is allowing hunters vehicle access across the forest to pick up downed game for a mile from any road. The problem? Since the area has so many roads, it's impossible to get more than a mile from an open road in any direction outside a wilderness area within the forest boundaries. Roads on the Kaibab are a major cause of erosion that contaminates the Verde and Little Colorado River watersheds, including habitat for the imperiled desert nesting bald eagles, mentioned just above, and endangered fish like the razorback sucker. The Center for Biological Diversity's recommended alternative would reduce road density to 1 mile of road per square mile of land, as well as preventing off-road driving to pick up downed game and to camp. And there's still time to encourage the Forest Service to take our proposal to heart, but we need your help. To do that, go to www.biologicaldiversity.org and help out. It's a good thing to do. It really, really is. Alrighty. And I've put my little piece of paper somewhere. And I can't find it, but that's... Anyway, that's all the time we have for news this week on the Earth First Update. The Earth First Updates are presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. And we thank you for listening and tune in next Thursday evening for another edition of Earth First Radio. If you'd like to hear a podcast or download an Earth First Update from the past, please go to the following website, www.h2opodcast.com. That's h2opodcast.com. When you get there, click on Earth and then select Earth First Radio. And we thank the folks at the h2opodcast.com for recording and archiving those shows for our listeners.